This is Steve Hiles welcoming you to episode 6 of the Teacher Rockstar podcast, a place where tips and strategies critical to the new teacher are discussed. In this episode, we will be talking about grading, specifically best practices, what to grade and what not to grade. Speaking from my 20 years of teaching experience, grading can be extremely overwhelming if you let it. Grading and the process of discerning what to grade, what not to grade, and how to execute grading best practices for students is not exactly a teacher's cup of tea, but as is normal, first-year teachers have a lot to be apprehensive about. They've embarked on a fantastic journey of meeting students, creating lesson plans, and beginning an extremely meaningful career. On the downside, one aspect of teaching that causes more dread than excitement for first-year teachers is grading. Okay, let's dive right in. Grading is a cumbersome task for all teachers, but for new teachers, it can be debilitating. We know we need to give timely and relevant feedback, and we know grading is important, but how can we make the process easier on ourselves? Grades reflect personal philosophy and human psychology, as well as efforts to measure intellectual progress with standardized objective criteria. Whatever your personal philosophy about grades are, their importance to your students means you must make a constant effort to be fair and reasonable while maintaining grading standards you can defend if challenged. Grades cause a lot of distress for students and often seem to inhibit enthusiasm for learning for its own sake. But grades are a fact of life. They need not be counterproductive if students know what to expect. In this episode, we're going to break down few tips and strategies that will help struggling teachers to work out their grading and make things much better. The first part of the episode will deal with 5 helpful tips with regards to good grading practices. Number 1, the basic step for having a good grading practice is to plan the whole policy. Whatever the teacher is about to do, plan it and then do it. Make a plan for evaluating student work and stick to it. Establish evaluation procedures when the subject is in the planning stages. Something that would help the teacher further in the process is if the teacher is working with assistants or colleagues, meet with them and decide how many and what kinds of evaluation methods to use. Then decide how the student's work should be graded and what proportion of the final mark each assignment, quiz, etc. will comprise. This is also the time to set out a policy for missed or failed work and late assignments. 2. And while investing in yourself in the first step, keep in mind the basic idea, not everything is to be graded. Very important here. And by that we mean, depending on the curriculum expectations for your school, you may be in a position to determine what is and what is not worth going into the gradebook. Use that power. It's okay not to grade an assignment or give credit for participation. This is very important as you have a life outside of teaching. Now, folks, I would break down the grading situation as follows. I would focus grading primarily summative assessments, things such as end of chapter, end of unit tests, quizzes, and STEM projects. Now, things that need not be graded may include formative assessments, practice work, morning work, and of course, homework. Having said that, I would always review student work and of course the homework to see where I need to reteach and pull in small group instruction whenever appropriate. Those things that I did not grade, I would simply just put a check mark on top of the paper and file it accordingly. 3. Explain your plan and grading policy. Now, this is extremely important. Yes, you need to do it not only for your sake, but for the students to know how they are going to be awarded grades. Once your plan is in place, take the earliest opportunity to make students aware of your policies. Letting them know about how the grades are going to work will only make them more responsible. Also, take time in class to tell students what you expect from them and how you plan to measure their progress in achieving the goals of your class. Explain these goals and how you feel the evaluations, grading procedures, and policies will help to achieve these goals and allow you to fairly evaluate their progress. Good planning and clear explanations will prevent student confusion. Be clear about any consequences to grades that will result from absences, missed tests and quizzes, late assignments, or violations of ethical conduct. Tip 4. Once the teacher has made himself or herself clear about the process of grading, then it is practically easy for the teacher to do the work. But merely informing the students about the plan alone does not work. Keep students informed of their progress throughout the grading period. If a discrepancy exists between a grade a student thinks he or she has and the number in your grade book, resolve that discrepancy immediately. And tip 5. And once the policy is set, then by all means be consistent. Make sure the policy applies equally to all students. Subjective adjustments during or after a reporting period are likely to cause confusion. Validate grades with an alternative assessment of learning, such as a pre- or post-test, or knowledge survey. Avoid testing on material other than what you have taught, or using grading methods other than those stated beforehand. Now, those were 5 tips that can enhance your grading, but these alone are not enough for a teacher to be effective. So now we'll be looking into 5 steps that will help a teacher make grading more effective. Step 1. Create assignments that have clear goals and criteria for assessment. The better students understand what you're asking them to do, the more likely they'll do it. Step 2. Use different grading scales for different assignments. Grading scales include letter grades with pluses and minuses, a 100-point numerical scale for exams and certain types of projects, a check plus or check minus for quizzes, homework, responsive papers, quick reports or presentations, and pass, fail, or credit, no credit could be given for the work. Step 3. Limit your comments or notations so that the students can use them for further learning or improvement. Step 4. Spend more time on guiding students in the process of doing work than on grading it. Step 5. And as mentioned in the stages of planning, for each significant assignment, establish a grading schedule and stick to it. Grading is not a process that has to be done for the sake of doing it. We really must try to understand the purpose for grading, and that is nothing other than being able to give productive evaluation and feedback to the students. Now, while giving feedback to the students, have the following in mind. Use your comments to teach rather than to justify your grade, focusing on what you'd most like students to address in future work. Link your comments and feedback to the goals for an assignment. The next point, comment primarily on patterns, representative strengths, and weaknesses. Avoid over-commenting or picking apart the student's work. And lastly, in your final comments, ask questions that will guide further inquiry by students rather than provide answers for them. When the teacher is more focused on bringing the best out of the student, and when the student and parents find the same to be true, then it becomes totally easy for the teacher to award grades and feedback for improvement. This whole process of being available for the students is to be done with utmost care. The teacher has to be consistent in communicating with his or her students, but regardless how much information we communicate about our grading policies, there might remain possibilities for the students to be confused. So in order to minimize student complaints about grading, it would be helpful for the teacher to follow these 4 things. Number 1, include your grading policies, procedures, and standards in your packet that you send home to parents at the beginning of the year. 2, avoid modifying your policies, including those on late work, once you've communicated them to students and parents. Once things are set in motion, you need to try to stick to it. Next point, for older students, distribute your grading criteria to them at the beginning of the term and remind students of the relevant criteria when assigning and returning work. And the last point here, the most important step in grading and making students happy is by keeping in-class discussion of grades to a minimum, focusing rather on lesson or subject learning goals. Now that the primary steps and general information regarding grading has been made clear, let's consider the rubric as a means of grading. I think this is very, very powerful. Now, another great strategy for evaluating student work is by using rubrics, establishing and discussing specific characteristics of success when an assignment is first distributed benefits both students and teachers. Creating grading rubrics or grids is a typical way to do this. Having received the criteria with an assignment, students are able to work towards specific goals. Later, when they look at their grades, they can see at a glance the strengths and weaknesses of their work. Teachers are able to grade according to customized descriptive criteria that reflect the intention of a specific assignment and won't change according to the hour of night or amount of effort a particular student has exhibited. Rubrics can also save on grading time, as they allow teachers to detail comments on one or two elements and simply indicate ratings on others. Finally, grading rubrics are invaluable in subjects that involve more than one teacher, as in team-taught or multi-section courses, because they ensure that all teachers are measuring work by the same standards. Now, the process of creating a grading rubric takes a little time, but it is relatively simple. Let us have a brief walkthrough of the three steps. Number one, identify the criteria. The first step involved in creating assignment-specific rubrics is revisiting an assignment's intended outcomes. These objectives can be considered prioritized and reworded to create a rubrics criteria. If, for example, let's say you assign a literature review, hoping students might become skilled at reducing complex texts down to pithy summaries. Concise summary can be one of the grading criteria included in the rubric. Take care to keep the list of criteria from becoming unwieldy. 10 ranked items are usually the upper limit. In addition to be usefully translated and used by students, criteria should be specific and descriptive. Criteria like clear or organized or interesting don't mean much to students when they sit down to actually revise. Okay, the second main point here, weigh criteria. Once you have identified criteria, make decisions about their varying importance. Say, for example, you are teaching geography, and you assigned an essay to help students become skilled at creating concrete and accurate observation-based descriptions, practice in analyzing their data, and in devising a land use proposal, and able to create correctly formatted, error-free prose. When creating a grading rubric for that assignment, you will need to decide on the relative weight of each criterion. Things like, is the error-free prose objective equal to the analysis objective? And the last point here, describe levels of success. When the criteria has been set, devise an assessment scale. Many teachers like to limit this section of the rubric to a 3-point scale. For example, weak, satisfactory, and strong. Others may prefer to break this down into 5 or 6 levels, adding categories like needs extensive revision or outstanding. Try to work out the levels according to the kind of class and students you as the teacher has. And using this method, teachers can help the students in a phenomenal way. Rather than questioning your reason for the assessment of each student's assignment, you can take some of the mental work out of it. Did they do this? Check. Did they do that? Check. You'll make grading easier for yourself by giving them solid feedback that you've already considered. But, as we know, teachers can get busy and won't have enough time at school to do the work. Papers can get piled up, things can get out of control. And the tip to avoid such a situation is not allow piling up to happen in the first place. This can be done by arranging a little of your routine. Let's take a look at this. Try not to let students' ungraded work sit on your desk until you're ready to grade. Leave it in the file trays where kids turned it in. Messy piles accumulate so quickly. If you have a good filing system, it should take less than 10 seconds to find any stack of ungraded student work in your filing trays. Avoid the paper trap, so there will be no more confusion about what's already been entered into your electronic gradebook, or what's been graded and what hasn't. And whenever the papers are taken home to be graded, have an organized file folder system for transporting and keeping track of papers. There can be various folders that would help in sorting the papers, like a folder for classwork, homework, and tests. Additional folders also can be helpful. For example, what's already been graded to be entered into your gradebook, or what's already been graded to be filed to review or redo with the class, incomplete, makeup work, or to go home for that matter. Don't let papers go ungraded for more than a week tops. This is easier said than done, I know. However, more than once I've been in the middle of grading a tedious math worksheet when I realized I had already tested the kids on that material. So what's the point of grading the practice classwork at that point? It was too late for me to assess whether or not the kids were getting it, and because I never provided them feedback on how they did, it's possible that a number of them had used the assignment to practice incorrect strategies. It was a waste of time for me and for them. I want to talk briefly about when to actually find the time to grade. Now, for me personally, folks, I've always made it a point to get to work early, and I've used some of that time to do some grading. Also, I use my planning time, or I allocated some time after school to complete grading. Now, staying a while after school may not be an option for you, simply because you may have to pick up your children at daycare or attend other priorities. Another strategy that may also be of help to you is to have a certain day or days of the week that you dedicate just to grading and then knock it out. My point I want to make here is that first-year teachers and those just fresh out of college need to strike a balance of teaching and home life. Try to keep your grading papers at school. I have to admit, I sometimes didn't follow my own advice, but overall, taking papers home to grade should be, in my opinion, the exception and not the rule, because you do have a life outside of teaching, and I don't want you to get burnt out. Everything that we have said and what we are expected to do is to help our students. Grading is complicated and full of gray areas. Ultimately, when it comes down to brass tacks, there is no right or wrong way to grade your students as long as you hold them all to the same standards and use grades to foster growth. While grades do not define your students or their abilities, they do have a direct impact on their lives. They can discourage them and lead to unwanted competitiveness in the classroom. It is clear that grading does not have to be an issue that makes teachers dread it. Teachers know the definition of busy better than most. Like I mentioned earlier, if you can report to work earlier and grade some or during your planning time, or dedicate a certain day or days to stay after school to get done, that would be the thing to do so that you can avoid taking a stack of papers home over the weekend. To recap, every piece of paper, teachers, does not need to be graded, okay? I'd focus grading on summative assessments like end of chapter, end of unit, quizzes on material that you've already taught, cooperative learning or STEM projects, things of that nature. What I personally wouldn't worry about grading would be formative assessments, practice work, morning work, and of course homework, things along those lines. Now, as far as homework goes, you don't really know for sure if the child did it or the parent. That's why I personally have never graded homework, but I did check it. Every student's homework. Absolutely. I hope that this has been helpful to you and that you got a bunch of value out of this. This is one of those topics that I wish I had known when I first began teaching. I want to thank you for listening to the Teacher Rockstar Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Hiles. We hope you've enjoyed listening to these tips and strategies on grading best practices. Teachers, I would like to share with you a free Let's Write a Book activity for students in grades 3 through 5, which includes templates and step-by-step directions for creating their very own mini book. Your kids are simply going to love this. All you simply have to do is go to getstartedontherightfoot.com. That's getstartedontherightfoot.com. I'd like you to go ahead and visit my blog and subscribe to my newsletter for the latest educational research, freebies, and other goodies at stevesclassroomresources.blogspot.com. And don't forget to subscribe to us at Teacher Rockstar. If you'd like to support us, then by all means, please feel free to share our podcast with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. That would be super cool. Thanks again, folks, and we'll see you same time, same place next week. And remember, teachers, you got this.